America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host of the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining us, as always, is Teresa Sammons and Chris Deloge. Also, Patrick Mifflin is back for a second go-around. Say hi, everybody.
How's it going?
Hey.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. So we are now officially in the muggy month of June. We're recording this on June 5th. 2021, and yeah, as far as like, you know, for what we're doing here on Smashpad, I mean, we're all kind of getting ready for what is essentially going to be E3 this year, but let's be honest, it's not really going to be much of an E3.
I mean, they're going to have all the press conferences, and obviously with the pandemic and them not being able to be in the LA Convention Center, we're going to benefit because of all the demos that are going to be dispensed throughout the week. So,
yep,
it's not E3. It's better.
Yeah. But yeah. So as far as like shit that went down this week, some things happened. There's some fuckery with the murderous cop, Derek Chauvin, who is now a convicted murderer. They're now trying to negotiate what his sentence is going to be, and his lawyers are fucking despicable. Also, the Sackler family are making a deal that may or may not get them immunity from opioid lawsuits. We'll get more into that. But we got some other shit that happened. There's some political news that came out of Israel that basically may spell the end of Netanyahu's reign as prime minister. Unfortunately, they're not really replacing him with anybody that's much better, but we'll get to that. And of course, there's like stuff about vaccines and everything. A bunch of states trying to offer various incentives to get people to get vaccinated. And West Virginia is just doing the most West Virginia thing possible when it comes to trying and getting people to get the vaccine. And then, of course, we marked a rather grim 100-year anniversary here. Here in the United States. We'll tell you what it is, but I'll just put it this way. Most of America didn't know it was a thing until they watched the first episode of Watchmen on HBO. Yeah. Because that's what our education system is like. We also have a bunch of other stuff and some sports news. You remember the Super Mario Brothers movie? Not the one that's apparently in production, but the original one that was
Bob Hoskins, John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper.
And a shitload of nothing. Yeah. There's now the, quote, Morton Jankel cut, which is now out on archive.org. We'll be talking about it. But basically, it's a director's cut. And, does it make the movie better? Does it make it worse? Or is it just something that's just kind of there? Well, we don't know. Oh, yeah, and the Postmaster General is a fucking crook. But you knew that.
Yeah, that's not news.
All this and more.
Genital.
Yeah, all this and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, before we start, we do what we always do. Pat, since you're here second time around, you tell us and start us off. What have you been up to this week?
So, last week, I had my PS5, obviously, and I'm actually playing it right now. I'm going through Astro's Playroom. Really fun game. I'm kind of surprised that they gave it away for free. It's a nice kind of tech demo slash platform game that really shows off the controller. And, it's a lot of fun. I'm going through that right now. And even though my feelings about the PS5 have not changed by owning one, it's still it still needs games, obviously. I've kind of gone all in on my bad decisions because now there is an Xbox Series X sitting next to it. So I think what I ended up deciding subconsciously is E3 could be really good this year. And if E3 is really good combined with no meaningful change on the hardware production front, that could be, it could make getting a system go from bad to worse.
That's a fair point.
And there's already enough on the PS5 to justify owning one, specifically the Final Fantasy 14 port, which is magnificent. But so I don't feel bad buying one and then having to wait a while for more games to come along, because even if it just ends up being my Final Fantasy 14 box for the time being, I'm cool with that. Same with the Xbox Series X. Obviously, the benefits to older games on that are a lot more pronounced. And I look forward to really biting into that over time. But I just, I would rather look like a schmuck for having these systems than look like one for not having them. Yeah. And E3 is going to be the deciding factor on that. So I'm definitely invested in E3 now this year. Hopefully we get a lot of software news and we don't see too much more of Sony taking a step back to the PS4 for a lot of their first party titles. Because I mean, obviously 2 days after I got my PS5, there was that announcement that, oh yeah, we're doing God of War and Gran Turismo on PS4.
Mm.
So 2 days after I got my PS5. So that they might as well have flown Jim Ryan out to Utah to kick me in the dick personally.
Mm.
But you know, it came down to, I have the money. That wasn't a problem. I was able to buy the systems and not have to eat ramen for the next 3 months or anything. Thank goodness, because I've been selling off a lot of my retro stuff over the last couple months. And so I've been able to accumulate enough money to where I could comfortably make these purchases. And honestly, it just came down to, I would rather have these systems and not need them than need the systems and not have them. So that's what I ended up doing. Speaking of E3, what are you guys doing for that this year? Because I will be around. I will be off all that week.
I think we're still figuring that out, but
okay.
Yeah.
Keep me in the loop.
Yeah. I have to take a look at my schedule and all the, where the shows are at. We might be doing some co-stream stuff for that, talking over it.
All right. Sounds good.
I'll let you know when we get that all sorted out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because they just finally announced all those times, like the last few days.
Yep.
It's like, oh, let's wait until the last minute. And I think there's still some other stuff that hasn't been announced yet either. So
yeah, we know what Microsoft and Nintendo are doing. Sony's always kind of last minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So I think, is that all for you, Pat?
Other than that, just kind of been watching the Stanley Cup playoffs and enjoying that. And I'm not actually looking at the show notes right now, so I might have had something else written down. But if it comes to me,
something about the Junepocalypse.
Yeah. So obviously, it started with the Virtua Fighter 5 Ultimate Showdown announcement for the first.
Yep.
And then there's Ratchet and Clank this month. There's Guilty Gear Strive.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many games coming out that that it's nearly impossible to keep up. And
yep.
Yeah. Phantasy Star Online New Genesis coming out on the 9th.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Actually, Guilty Gear Strive comes out next Friday, this coming Friday.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Damn, that snuck up on us.
And there's also early access for pre-orders, so I'll probably be playing that a good chunk of the week alongside my Virtua Fighter fix that is already underway.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened this year, but everything just kind of came together for June, and I'm certainly feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So that's been it for me.
All right. Well, Teresa, what about you?
Well, the other day I downloaded the new Blackwood expansion for Elder Scrolls Online, and I'm still downloading it and patching because it's new to that computer. I haven't played Elder Scrolls in like 2 years, so it's new to that computer, and yeah, that's taking forever. Obviously, I have a little update on my graphics card from last week. I think last week I had gone into the city and picked up a an old one. Well, we hooked up the computer, and guess what? The 2070 Super is running just fine. You know what? I don't know. I'm not going to ask. I'm just going to. I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it. It's running fine. I've been playing everything, doing everything. Jacob has been playing, well, streaming Subnautica VR to his Quest 2. Nothing, not even a hiccup. So yeah, we're good there. I played a good bit of PSO2 this week. I forgot about that. During
Nice.
kind of during lunch times, whenever we didn't have house guests, we had house guests this week. For the
Yeah.
first time in forever. But we did, like, after they left, we watched a lot of things to kind of catch up and wind down. We've been watching MASH still. We've already watched all of it. We went through it, I don't know, 10 years ago, watched everything, every single episode. Of course, I forgot almost all of them, but you know. We watched Invincible the other night, and our kid was pretty mad that we watched without him. And we're like, yeah, no, you're not watching that. You can wait a little bit. You're not watching that. So we're probably like 6 episodes in. I think we've only got a couple of more. It's kind of a short season from what I'm guessing, because it feels like it's going to wrap up pretty soon. And then we are literally in the last 10 or 15 minutes of the very last episode, like episode 138 or 139 of Dragon Ball. Literally, like, I had just enough time where we could all finish it, and my aunt called and I took the phone call. So they're the everybody's just waiting so we could finish that. And it's okay because I had started to nod off, and I would have been really pissed if I missed the end of the wedding arc, pretty much.
Gee, I wonder what happens.
Yeah,
I
I
know.
wonder.
I think they're gonna call it off.
Yeah,
It's like, oh, you thought I was
they're gonna
food?
get, yeah, they're gonna get killed by that god or demigod girl that he's fighting right now, I'm sure. They're all gonna but yeah, we're doing that. This week we did 8th grade graduation. I gotta tell you guys, the shit that goes on now, we didn't do any of this stuff when I was a kid. I mean, it's kind of more of a deal right now than it should be. But, you know, post-COVID or kind of halfway post-COVID, again, I'm not going to bitch too much. Whatever. So I still think you got too much in gifts, but anyway. However, shortly after graduation, he got his second COVID shot. So, yeah, because he got it on day two of it being available. So some of his friends have already they had already gotten it Thursday. He got it Friday night, and most of them are down for the count. Yeah. Nothing, like, nobody's had anything really bad. It's enough that they're pretty miserable, but they could still watch TV. So yeah, one of them spent half the day taking a bubble bath because she just felt like crap. So I'm like, okay, she's 12. She could take a bubble bath all day long if she wants. I don't care. She's not my kid either. That's kind of what was going on there. And as I said, I'm still downloading Elder Scrolls Online, and I'm pretty sure tomorrow morning I'm still going to be downloading Elder Scrolls Online. So let's see if I actually get to play this shit time in the next week.
You know, Endwalker's going to be out by the time you're done downloading that.
You know, right? Yeah, like I almost had to go buy another solid state drive for this because I needed like 96 gigs of space, and I don't have that because I put a 2 or 3 gig. I had one, but I put it in my kid's computer instead of mine. So it's going to be playing off of I have a bank of 4 hard drives that I set up in as an array in Windows. So it's my storage space. That's their official Windows term for it. I put it on that. So let's see how horribly, horribly slow this is. It may not be too bad, but I kind of think it's going to be pretty bad. So we'll see. But that's pretty much it for me.
All right, Chris, what about you?
Let me see. It's been fucking hot as hell this week.
Yeah,
It
it
was
has.
up near the 90s.
90 fucking three.
I think we were at
It's
88 today. Probably felt like 90 or so. I was glad I didn't have to be out in that for too long, but still a pain in the ass, especially driving home being just a sweaty mess. But yeah, let's see. Been watching some stuff. Watched Sweet Tooth. I'm
What's
about
that?
4 episodes in on it's a Netflix show based on, I think, a DC comic. So the whole premise is that there is this worldwide pandemic that kills a bunch of people. Like it's you can tell somebody has it because their pinky finger starts shaking uncontrollably. So yeah, it's and the story is that this guy who has this kid, and like the whole thing is that as this is all going down, they notice that all the kids that are being born are hybrids, animal hybrids. So they're part human, part animal. And like the babies they show, there's like one that's like part rats, part pig, dog, all this kind of stuff. But yeah, the person that's going out to the woods, as he's noticed all this terrible stuff's going down, has one of his own. His kid is a hybrid, but with the deer, which means he has the antlers and the ears. Nothing else. Like some of the babies they showed have like the dog has like a streak of fur down its nose. It's like a dog nose kind of thing. So this kid just kind of mostly has like a human face and head, but just the ears and the antlers are different. And they also jokingly show that like at night you can see his fucking eyes glowing. So a little bit weird there, but can smell really well, can hear really well, that kind of thing. But the parent is sort of set up house in the middle of the woods, secluded, all that, raises the kid, teaches him how to speak and all that, because apparently all the other hybrids never learn to speak. So that kind of sets him apart, that kind of thing. But then one random day, a stranger sort of approaches the fencing around their area that they live in, and sort of marks the fence after talking to him, that kind of thing, with like these ribbons. And sort of you hear like some sort of confrontation, and then the father seems to be sick with the what they call the sick for that disease. Passes away. And the kid finds a like safe box buried that has a bunch of stuff in it, is like money and credit cards. He has no idea what those are. He just throws them away. But then finds a picture of his mom. So he wants to go find his mom, but basically has been like taught a number of things, but not really much about the world. He's been told that that outside of their like compound is just fires all over the place, and that's the bad people are out there, that kind of stuff. So as he starts like wandering outside the compound when he's ready to to move on. Immediately starts running into poachers. But gets saved by this man who he calls Big Man. So the Big Man kind of takes care of him. Is trying to get him to Colorado, where is the only thing that's written on that picture of his mom. I think they get help from a family, and the mom there thinks that she recognizes the area she's in as like Red Rock, Colorado. So they're trying to find a way to get over there. Where I'm at, I'm like 4 episodes in. It's like 8 episodes for this first season. So I'm curious to see where else it goes. But definitely start learning more about what the world is outside of their like forest, which is like there's plenty of, you know, like it seems like the federal government's fallen all governments. So there's lots of groups, sort of some that are just hunting the hybrids, blame the sick on them, that kind of stuff. A lot of interesting kind of lore around this. And I imagine people that have read the comics already know all of this stuff.
Yep. But,
it's pretty neat. And it seems more kid-friendly than I would have expected just from the basic plot they set up. But any of the people that get killed, there's no like blood or gore or anything. So that might be something you can watch with your kid, Teresa. But yeah, no, he does use a bear trap to kill a bunch of people, but it's out in during a storm, dark, all that kind of stuff. So they don't really show any like actual damage to them. But you do hear like the metal hitting people. Like, well, they're, and he, the big man describes when he knocks out people, he's like, oh, he's sleepy, to the kid. Because the kid doesn't like, because he can hear really well, he doesn't like gunshots. Because they really mess them up, that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of neat stuff to this. So yeah, there's that. Watched MODOK, finished that up. Ends pretty interestingly with this first season. Sets up for a second. Definitely goes well beyond any sort of MCU stuff. So I'm curious to see how that goes. Assuming they're going to do a season 2.
Yeah.
Let's see. Watched some more Venture Brothers. I am in season 3. Some parts in there. We can definitely tell that the writing sort of grown up a little bit, because there's a bit with Jonas Jr. that where Monarch is his arch now. So he has he starts calling, because he has the wife from the Fantastic Four family, as well as the brother. Who is mentally challenged, and Monarch calls him the R word. Mm. He goes like, whoa, 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 you can't use that word. He's like, I'm supposed to be a villain. You know, you can't be, you know, all this stuff. But a lot of fun stuff there. Still looking forward to watching some more of that. I still got a ways to go, because I think it's, what, 7 seasons? So I still have...
7 or 8, yeah.
Yeah. So got quite a bit to go. But enjoying that a lot. For games, I've been playing Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne. Got to a save point so that I could actually sort of save where I was at, because I was trying to play it before Day Zero and just couldn't get far enough in that. Yeah, that game's pretty interesting mechanics-wise. I definitely see where the other Shin Megami Tensei games after that sort of got a lot of their mechanics from, because there's like the whole moon thing. As you're running around, you see like the phases of the moon in the corner as it goes through that. And I assume that affects it in some way. But also, as you move around, you can see this like box that is changing color. And it goes to like yellow, then orange, and then red when you're about to start a fight at some point in the next few steps you're going through. But still in this hospital, as I've run into at least a way to see what the first boss is, which is a demon called Fornius, which if you played your Persona or other Shin Megami Tensei games, it's like a big manta ray that can fly around, has like a crown on it, that kind of thing. It's like hanging out in the opposite side of the hospital. But I managed to get a good shortcut that lets me get back to the sort of starting area where you kind of start the proper game. So you can actually save and heal up and all that. The combat's pretty pretty much what you expect. As I level up, I get more abilities that I am expecting, like the, like I'm going to getting, or no, I have analysis that lets me use for, I think, some MP. You can pull up, like, here's what they're weak to, strong against, that kind of thing. So that's neat. There's a weird whole way of determining the turns. Mm-hmm. I assume speed's part of that, but it's also occasionally just grants you like extra turns, that kind of stuff. I haven't figured that out. But it's like your team has like 3 turns, I think, usually at this point that you can use. And it just picks the different party members you have, which I have 3 demons with me now. Mm-hmm. One of them's the fairy that heals, because that's the first one you always get in these games, usually. And I picked up 2 others by talking to them. You definitely tell they got better at making the designing the menus for the battles and all that, because you have to hit like left and right to go to other parts of the menu. Mm-hmm. I was like, if you would not have, you know, messed around with buttons, you might not have realized you could talk to them to try to convince them to come to your side. Mm. You might have seen that you unlocked it, but it doesn't necessarily make it obvious that you can do that. I think the other demons, as they level up, they get alternate versions. I think one of them has Seduce that you can use if you somehow find out the demon likes to be seduced. But they do the same thing where it's like, oh, give me money or give me one of your health, you know, that kind of thing before they join. So there's a lot of that in there. So I'm looking forward to putting some more time into that, and it works really well with the DualSense as far as just using the right buttons and all that. Let's see. Also been playing some more No Man's Sky. They put out a big update this week that sort of changed some things about the visuals. Nothing really huge, but it adds, you'll find more of the creatures are furry now instead of looking like they're like all like reptilian skin kind of thing, like leathery skin.
Yeah.
Which I've noticed just looking at the compendium of creatures I've scanned. Like, ooh, there's fur on this.
Yep.
And I don't know if that's easier to tell on PS5 than PS4 or what, but they've done a few things there to make the game look a bit better. Yeah. And I think on PC it supports DLSS, which means it is able to make the game look better without being as resource intensive. And hopefully stabilizes the frame rate for people that maybe don't have the greatest kind of PCs for it. So that's been pretty fun. Now I have my Normandy frigate for Mass Effect that can go out and do missions for me. So that's pretty cool. I've also been playing a little bit of Virtua Fighter 5 Ultimate Showdown.
Nice.
That's on PS Plus this month for the PS4 version. Also on PS Now, we have that.
Mm-hmm.
It seems pretty nice from what it's, it looks really nice. All that kind of stuff. I just basically hopped into some arcade action just to play around with it a little bit. I was using Sarah. So I think that's one of the characters I played with back when I was last dinking around with one of these games. Which was kind of the second release of the PS3 version when they put that on PS Plus. That was, I think, mainly only multiplayer content. So this one has all the online stuff, tournaments, all that kind of stuff in it. That seems pretty cool. But I was just sticking to the arcade stuff. So seems neat. Looks really nice. I think the only downside is just a PS4 version of the game. But it seems like a good PS4 port. PS4 version that's kind of remade in the Yakuza engine. So the characters might look a little bit different, but I think they all look really nice. So that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
Yeah, well, as for me, I'm playing No Man's Sky as well. I am now at the point where I now have my own freighter. I've gotten to the point now where I'm also hiring people to work on my base. I'm kind of branching out from the galaxy I'd largely been thinking around in, you know, furthering the plot along, stuff like that. And, that game really is just a lot of fun. It is very much like a slow burn when you first start because it's very much a survival game. But, you know, once it really kicks off, it's really hard not to get, you know, sucked into the game loop. The recent patch now makes it now where you can actually train animals so that you can actually ride on them. And I have not been able to pull that off just yet, but I sure as hell have tried.
I want to say that's been possible for a while. I think they now have that possible for flying animals.
Might be.
I don't know how you're going to get to one of those, but...
Well, from what I've heard, you can apparently, lay, bait and stuff to draw them down.
Yeah.
And I've also gotten more into, the missions and stuff that you can get from the space stations, where you have to, destroy a bunch of sentinels, or cull the animal population of a given planet, or... track down some minerals, stuff like that.
I'm sure you figured out how to evade sentinels when they start going nuts.
Yeah.
Which is you get in your ship and you fly away.
Yeah.
You're like, what? We can't find them. As long as you don't leave the planet, then they'll send ships at you.
Yeah. Yeah. If you leave the planet, they will 100% send a fleet of ships after you. And they won't stop either. They will keep coming at you until, there's a lull just long enough before you can hit your pop drive and just zoom out of there.
That's just where you go back to the planet and just fly for a bit.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, he's dinking around down there. We can't figure out this flying in planet thing.
Yeah.
That's the one flaw of their whole police system.
Yeah, pretty much. Mostly right now I'm trying to get my hands on this nano tool that's it's a million and 800,000 something credits. It's got 19 different empty sockets to put all your updates and new tech and stuff into it.
Yeah.
And trying to work towards that.
Your gun?
Yeah.
Okay.
My
multi-tool. That's what they call
it. Yeah. And basically going out into space, mining a bunch of gold, bringing it back to the station, selling it, shit like that. Selling off the minerals I don't need at that given moment, because a lot of the really the game is actually really generous when it comes to the base minerals. There's a bunch of them everywhere. In fact, I'll be honest, the biggest issue I've had since starting this game is having enough space to keep shit.
Yeah, that's where you gotta stop at every space station. You can upgrade your inventory one slot at a time.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing about the expedition is a lot of the missions gave you three of those each.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right, fuck, we'll just fill this out. I'll put some here, and the thing you want to do is probably fill out that technology tab and the other one, because you can put all your system stuff in the technology area.
Mm-hmm.
so they don't clutter up the rest of the inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do you want to look for like the expensive stuff, like the what is it, the pearls, all that kind of stuff? That are generally underground, that kind of thing. There's one of the pearls, like the bright shiny balls that cause the sentinels to come after you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff like that you can find.
Yeah. All right. But yeah, other than that, yeah, I'm also playing Virtua Fighter 5 Ultimate Showdown.
Yes.
And I forgot how fucking high stress this fucking game is, because even on normal difficulty, the fucking AI can absolutely obliterate you in seconds if you're not careful. But I still managed to fight through. I played as Vanessa, and I got through to Dural, who then proceeded to absolutely curb stomp me into the ground. And
perfectly normal, perfectly healthy.
Yeah. She has that mommy energy. Yeah. Literally, apparently, if game lore is correct.
Yep.
Or is it? Actually,
Dural is remodeled from Kage's mother.
Yeah. I was going to say, don't they actually have like a different Dural model per game installment? But I guess they just reprogrammed her this time. I don't know. Anyway. That's the thing about the Virtua Fighter series. It's probably the one fighting game series that doesn't really have that expansive of a lore.
You just get like one little blurb about each character in every installment, and that's it.
And something about the, what is it, like the JP Corporation or whatever.
Yeah, there's some mafia involved. That's your Go, Jean, those guys.
Yeah.
Sarah as well. And then there's the whole storyline with Kage and Dural. But but it really is extremely simplistic.
Yeah, that's why they had to come up with a bunch of new shit for the anime.
The less we say about the anime, the better.
Yeah. But yeah, so I've also been playing that. I also been playing Sonic Mania, which is, you know, the...
Still so amazing.
Yeah, which also is like part of the PS Now package right now. And yeah, I love just how fucking random some of the shit in that game is. You know, like the boss fight against Robotnik in the Chemical Zone is literally...
You mean Bean Machine?
It's Puyo Puyo. That's literally what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get over to the movie studio zone, and there's like this weird shit where you're like trying to, you know, and honestly, I'm going to be completely honest. This boss fight is not put together very well, but it's the one where, you know, there's the one, one of Robotnik's, you know, weird like robot Sentai force that he's put together in a helicopter firing missiles at you. And there's like the long red missiles that you're supposed to avoid and the stunted like blue missiles you're supposed to hit so that they'll, you know, reverb back and hit one of the enemies.
Yeah.
And because you're going in perpetual motion during it, it's damn near impossible to avoid those red missiles unless you're really, really good.
Yeah, it's more about just hanging onto a single ring to keep yourself alive.
Yeah. But yeah, good game, good game. Books. I actually got this book recently, and I got it out of recommendation because, you know, in Japan they have the Seiyun Awards, and the Seiyun Awards are basically Japan's equivalent of like the Hugo Awards or Nebulas that we have here in the U.S. for science fiction writing. And a couple of years ago, that particular award was won by a guy named Gengen Kusano. And he won the award with a short novel he published called Last and First Idol. Now, I'm going to just real quickly put the cover art for this book on here because of how weirdly deceptive it is. Let me just get this up here. There we go. I'll go ahead and put it in the chat here. Yeah, because of how weirdly deceptive it is. Okay, it's called Last and First Idol, and it's a short story collection, and There's three stories in it. Last and First Idol is actually the first one that you went, that you get to. And if you look at it with that cover, you think it's like some kind of, I guess, fluffy, like light novel type thing about like, you know,
some idols.
Idols or stuff. Yeah, look real closely at that image. You'll notice that she's basically surrounded by like a bunch of galaxies and stuff.
Yeah.
And look closely on that thing she's wearing on her chest. Kind of looks like a silvery squid with like purple eyes.
Yeah, and it kind of looks like a some sort of voodoo doll type thing or something. You know, something that we see quite often.
And if you look underneath it, you'll notice it's connected to something that kind of looks like an egg. And you can't really see it very well with this image, but that egg has like the pattern of planet Earth on it. Yeah, this is not like piffy light novel fare. This is straight up fucking body horror shit. That the story actually is. It was controversial when it got nominated and won the award because, much like a certain book trilogy here in the U.S., this originally started out as a piece of fan fiction. Specifically, it was a fan fiction for the Love Live anime, which is, you know, about idols and stuff. But what Kusano did was he took the concept of like idols and he managed to stretch it out into something just absolutely fucking mind-blowing, terrifying. Because basically what it is that girl that you see there on the cover, God, I don't want to spoil it because there's so much crazy shit happens in like just 74 pages. But basically, she tries to go into an idol and she fails at it. And so she does what happens a lot in Japanese society, which is she jumps off the roof of a building and commits suicide. But her best friend, her sort of quote unquote producer, is absolutely obsessed with her and becomes obsessed with the idea of bringing her back to life. And a couple years after this girl commits suicide, the sun starts giving off a bunch of solar rays that very quickly end up taking out much of the ozone layer. And it just gets weirder from there. But basically, it turns into like full-on fucking body horror shit by the end of it. Yeah.
As you do.
It is very deceptive at first because it does seem like very light, fluffy shit. And then around the 30-page mark, it automatically starts going...
off the rails?
Completely fucking off the rails. That weird squid thing that's attached to her chest, that is actually a representation of something that the people of Earth end up creating to try and absorb all of the new radiation that's coming in through the depleted ozone layer, these enormous squid-like... these enormous, like, squid-like organisms that end up connecting themselves to the planet via something not all unlike an umbilical cord, but it also ends up, like, siphoning up a bunch of, like, the much-needed resources in the U.S. And then in the world and the planet, so it ends up creating a kind of it's weird shit. And she does manage to like bring that girl back, but it's let's just say she's not all there. And by all there I mean like literally her body isn't all there. When she first comes about, she's basically like a combination of like intestine and sausage links in human form. And the person who brings her back has long since abandoned the rest of her body and started implanting her her brain into other successive bodies, including one that is essentially a weird little robot thing connected to something that is essentially the size of a semi-truck that contains all of her much-needed organs. Yeah, it's fucking weird. And that's just the first story in that collection. but yeah, I've been reading that. And, oh yeah, it's fucking hot.
Yeah.
it's hot and it's humid and I fucking hate it.
And aren't you glad you're not in band camp?
Yeah, thank God.
I've had the AC on all week.
Yep. Yeah, and I got this fan that's been blowing on me pretty much for the last few days straight. Because again, it's not necessarily the heat down here in the South that does you in; it's the fucking humidity.
Yes.
Everything is way too moist. But anyway, all right. So we're all done here. We want to add anything before we move on?
Not really, that I can think of.
All righty then. Well then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, random factoid. And I wanted to sort of bring up the topic of how cultures tend to interpret various ancient peoples and events from cultures that are not of their own. For example, how many of you have ever seen any, like, say, Christian art from, say, China or Africa, and how they always depict, you know, the Jesus and the Holy Family in ways that are familiar to their particular culture? You know, you see them in China, and, you know, the family are usually decked out in, like, royal imperial garb, and the wise men are dressed like advisors or eunuchs or whatever. You know, you see images of the crucifixion from out of Africa, and, you know, everybody's an African, you know. What about a culture that had managed to isolate itself for hundreds of years and then having to tell story while still in isolation of another country far away from them from events that only had happened within, say, the last 60 or 70 years? Say, Edo-era Japan trying to teach people about the American Revolution.
Okay.
We just so happen to have something like that. So, a couple years ago, a guy named Nick Kapoor, who's a Japanese historian, he managed to find a copy of a book called Osanateyoki Banko Kukobanashi, which is a book that is written on from secondhand sources. One is Kaikaku Zushi and America Itoshi. It's a illustrated book that purports to tell from secondhand sources the story of the discovery of America, the American Revolution, and the rise of George Washington. And it does it all in just the most Japanese batshit way you possibly could. Now, understand something. This book was published in 1861, yes. And it details the story of America through the lens of a population that up to this point, whose only major contact with the outside Western world for hundreds of years had been through the Dutch and a little port in the southwest of Japan. And so their entire image of what the Western world looks like comes from drawings and paintings and books that they got from a country whose language they did not speak. And you get this, and you get this. And keep in mind, this is also a book that was published from secondhand sources. So what images do you end up getting? Well, to start us off, you get this image of what's purported to be George Washington in black Japanese imperial garb, firing an arrow and a bow next to the goddess of America, firing at who knows what.
Okay. I'm with you still.
Did you click on that link?
Yeah.
Okay. Then we go down there. We see an image of what's purported to be Columbus reporting to Queen Isabel the discovery of the North American continent.
I'm going to say that one's probably a little more accurate.
Slightly. One of the things you'll notice is a lot of the Westerners they depict often have a lot of facial hair. That's because, you know, in Japan, facial hair wasn't really a thing that men did until around the Meiji era. You know, I mean, obviously you had guys like Nobunaga and stuff who had, like, tiny little mustaches. but by that point, they had largely fallen out of fashion.
Okay.
So underneath that, we then have this image of George Washington trying to defend the honor of his wife against a British official named Asura, and who's meant to be similar to that character from Buddhist cosmology. Then underneath, we have an image of Washington's, quote, second-in-command, John Adams, battling snake.
I gotta tell you guys, I don't really think we have snakes like that in the U.S. Mm. I don't think we did either.
Mm. Then down here, we have an image of Washington and his wife, Carol. Obviously, his wife was not named Carol.
Oh,
his wife,
Martha, no.
Yeah, meaning an extremely youthful and bearded Benjamin Franklin, who really pulling off an impressive squat there. Honestly, one of the things you also got to notice is, have you noticed that the language of Kabuki is really shining through in a lot of this shit, too?
Mm.
Yeah, that's just another way that, you know, the lens of Japanese culture looking outward has that odd effect, you know? And then later underneath that, we have an older Washington and Ben Franklin, incredibly jacked, picking up an actual fucking cannon and firing it.
God, they had cannons!
Mm-hmm.
They had to know that that was not even remotely possible.
And then underneath there's a picture of George Washington just straight up punching a fucking tiger. Just...
Yeah.
I would pay good shit to get Dr. Franklin's actual take on this.
Mm. Something along the lines of, wow, I wonder what they were smoking, and can I have some? then at some point, John Adams and Ben Franklin have some kind of falling out, because then we have an image of Franklin basically, I mean, not Franklin, but Adams riding away on a horse and giving a parting shot at Franklin for some reason. Also notice the very out of historical round hats that they're wearing down there in the corner.
Yeah.
Then we got this image of John Adams just sort of chilling in the countryside, having a pet picnic with his elderly mother. You know, as you do. And I love the, like, Japanese, like, bottle of sake down there in the corner next to the picnic basket.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, John Adams ends up getting too focused and obsessed on the food and the drink, because as he's not looking, a giant snake comes along and eats his mother.
Okay, I'm done.
Oh, we're not done yet.
Oh, God, you're right.
Yeah, here's another image of what's supposed to be George Washington leading his army from behind in a carriage. Once again, a historical bowler hat. Flag has stripes, no stars. A historical top hat. And Washington was famous from leading from the front. So,
yeah, he quite was.
So much so that he got shot at and took a bullet a couple of times. Apparently, according to Kapoor here, apparently the writer who was making this book is really excited about the fact that the carriage has not one but two horses driving it. I don't know why, but that was kind of a big deal. Then John Adams, of course, is kind of pissed about the fact that the snake came along and killed and ate his mom. So he decides to go to a magical mountain fairy for help.
I mean, that would work in some European countries as well, but not so much America.
And so what does the mountain fairy do for Adams? She does him a salad and summons a giant eagle.
That's not an American eagle.
And apparently Adams is just straight up doing the fucking Cossack dance down here.
That's exactly what that looks like. Oh my God.
And so he and the enormous eagle team up to kill the giant snake, because that's the power of teamwork. And that's why an eagle is the national bird of America.
Oh my God. It's crazy.
Yeah. So for those who want to know, you can actually read, it's still in the original Japanese, but you can see the whole thing at Waseda University Library. Like, you can actually see the whole thing online. All of these images included. There might be some more. There's actually also, if you ever get a chance, go on YouTube. There is a video of this English guy who's reading a, I think, actually text from one of the two books that were sort of the secondary sources for this particular book that describes the life of George Washington from a Japanese historian. And it's amazing just how, like, from, again, through the lens of Japanese culture looking outward. They, you know, the idea of eventually, the British losing the mandate of heaven, and so a new king named George Washington comes along to rise up the people in righteous fury to overthrow the tyrant, and then they became a new country who kept to their traditions and became prosperous. It's that shit like that. It's fucking amazing.
It really is kind of a neat, you know, glimpse into how people perceive places that they've only heard or read of.
Yeah.
And, culture
is so completely alien to them. Because remember, we're talking about the Edo period here. Japan is still very much in the grips of the shogunate, which is one of the most notoriously autocratic regimes in the history of Southeast Asia. The idea of, keeping traditions and familial ties and all that stuff being sort of put onto a culture completely alien to theirs and attempting to reinterpret it in a language that they can understand. Yeah, it's incredibly fascinating stuff. That has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
I love it.
Yeah.
That was great. That was great.
I especially love just the images of them, carrying actual, fucking cannon barrels, like they're fucking hand cannons or some shit. For the record, they had cannons, yeah. Well, actually, you gotta also remember in the Edo period, the extremely strict, firearm control that they had. Cannons and guns largely disappeared after the feudal era because, once Tokugawa Ieyasu took over, he basically, he commandeered everybody's weapons and closed off the country and all that shit. The idea of, that's another story. That's another story. But we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah.
But anyway. All right, so it is now time for everybody. Well, that part of the show is passed already. I am drunk. Now we're starting the show proper. And as always, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And our first big assholes of the week is this federal judge who decided to move forward on a deal to give the Sackler family immunity from opioid lawsuits. Now, the Sackler family are the people who are behind Purdue Pharmaceuticals. Purdue Pharmaceuticals are the people who gave us that bit of ingestible, cheap, over-the-counter heroin we know of as OxyContin. And if you are a white person living in the South, somebody in your family has been fucking wrecked by this shit at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so here we have federal judge Robert Drain in White Plains, New York, who moved this controversial deal forward despite objections from dozens of state attorneys general. Setting the stage for a final vote by the company's creditors expected this summer. Yeah, they filed for Chapter 11 protection in 2019 after getting a number of lawsuits tied to its opioid sales practices. This development brings members of the Sackler family, some who own Purdue Pharma and served on the company's board of directors, a step closer to winning immunity from future opioid lawsuits. And they got the legal documents tied to this. That immunity would extend to dozens of family members, more than 160 financial trusts, and at least 170 companies, consultants, and other entities associated with the Sacklers. They are paying $4.275 billion. They very much plan and expect to be done with this chapter. An attorney representing Purdue Pharma said during a hearing this last week. One of the firms will secure protections from future opioid lawsuits under the deals Luther Strange and Associates, founded by former U.S. Senator Luther Strange, who helped Purdue Pharma pitch the bankruptcy plan to Republican state attorneys general. So yeah, this seems to keep going towards the thing that they want, while people would like them to not. A number of the state attorneys general, half of them in this country about.
Yeah.
It would be a shame for them to not get the full brunt of shit that they deserve for what they've done to people in this country.
Yeah, because you have to understand, they paid a bunch of doctors and pharmacists to churn this shit out like it was goddamn candy, without ever, you know, really telling people what the risks were. Because again, this is OxyContin. It has fucking, it's an opiate.
It's heroin.
Yeah, it's heroin in digestible pill form. And they, when even like early on, when people were starting to like bring up, you know, cases of like, you know, this shit's turning people into drug addicts, you know, people are, you know, it's not just that people are, you know, raiding medicine cabinets now, they're actually like going and trying to buy like black tar heroin and shit because it's cheaper. And so Purdue Pharmaceuticals basically instructed their board of directors and all their companies to try and put all the focus on the addicts as a sort of moral failing on their part. And not the fact that, you know, they were giving out a drug to people that was far too strong for something as simple as, you know, it's because, I mean, OxyContin is not just a painkiller. It's a fucking opioid.
Yeah.
And it basically wrecked all of it. The wreck it put through working class and middle class white America is like somebody dropped a fucking nuclear bomb and just swept aside a huge part of the population. It ran people into bankruptcy. It, you know, ruined families. It killed a whole fucking lot of people. And somehow these fuckers are going to be able to get away with it.
Yeah.
You know, fuck these people. But unfortunately, the assholery doesn't end there, because we've also got Derek Chauvin, the former cop and now convicted murderer, who, he's now going to get sentencing, and his lawyers are out there trying to say, oh, we think he should only get probation or a short prison sentence. Fuck you, he should get the maximum goddamn sentence.
Yep.
Yeah, the DA is asking for a sentence of 30 years, which they say would, quote, properly account for the profound impact of Chauvin's conduct on the victim's mm-hmm. family, and the community. Meanwhile, Chauvin and his lawyers, let's see, what does it say here? Basically saying, like, he should serve maybe probation with time served. Already, a number of the excuses they've used is stuff like he's the product of a broken system.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, so you're saying the policing system is broken?
Yeah.
We've
been trying to say that for a while now.
Yeah. Also that a 30 or 40 year sentence would harm his life prospects. Which is like, that's the point.
Point.
Yeah.
Also, you know, that like
Floyd doesn't have any life prospects that he was maybe, you know, hoping for, that you robbed him of.
Yeah. And the notion that because of everything he's done, that he would become a target in prison, which is like, yeah, that's why he's currently kept in a solo cell, kept away from everybody else. I would assume they would ensure that would keep going, make him pay for his crimes by having to, you know, spend his 30 plus years by himself.
Yeah. But it's not all bad. We do have some heroes this week to talk about. Well, in a matter of speaking, at least for one story, but we'll get to that. Democrats in the state of Texas actually walked out to block the GOP from passing a voting restrictions bill. And it got so bad that Governor Abbott actually threatened to withhold their paychecks, which I don't think he actually has the power to do. But
yeah,
makes him feel like he's big and powerful.
So this is actually something that's actually, believe it or not, this is actually something that's kind of a common occurrence in Texas because of the way that, you know, the state is so badly gerrymandered to favor the Republicans. Whenever the Republicans try to pull bullshit like this, be it this or like a tax bill or whatever, a bunch of the Texans from the, Democrats from the state legislature will just up and leave the fucking state.
Yeah.
Because it's like the one thing they can do.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work, but they try it regardless.
Yeah, and the Governor Abbott part of this, like saying he would veto Article 10 of the budget passed by the legislature. Which funds the legislative branch, saying no pay for those who abandon their responsibilities.
Yeah, that can be fixed very easily by just, you know, overruling his veto.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Midterm elections are coming up next year, folks.
Vote.
Yes. Yep.
We always say it, but we always mean it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this particular midterm is going to be very consequential because it's the first one after Trump, and we need to see just how much residue he's left and how much it's going to take to wash it off. But anyway, the U.S. has now announced their plans for sharing vaccine shots with other countries, which is good. I know some friends in Vietnam who need them very fucking badly.
Yeah, so with this, they...
Go ahead.
They are... they announced their plans here, and they are swiftly donating an initial allotment of 25 million doses of surplus vaccine through the United Nations-backed COVAX program, which should infuse a number of countries in South and Central America, Asia, Africa, and others where they are definitely experiencing shortages there. Let's see. Yeah, 'cause that program... up to this point had shared just 76 million doses. So this will infuse it with about a third more on top of that. Let's see.
We know if any of those are going to Canada, because I know Ontario's hurting right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know we are sending some around. Let's see. They announced plans to share 80 million doses globally by the end of June, most through COVAX. A quarter of the nation's excess will be kept in reserve for emergencies and for the U.S. to share directly with allies and partners. There's like a couple million going down to Mexico in sort of the border areas to help out there. Let's see. Of the first 19 million donated through COVAX, probably 6 million will go to South and Central America, 7 million to Asia, 5 million to Africa. The remaining 6 million, the initial distribution of 25 million. We directed by the White House, U.S. allies and partners, including Mexico, Canada, South Korea, West Bank and Gaza, India, Ukraine, Kosovo, Haiti, Georgia, Egypt, Jordan, Iraq, and Yemen, as well as for the United Nations frontline workers. But yeah, doing work to get more of these out here. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. In Vietnam, there's like 0.7 vaccines for a person. Which is...
That's a terrible ratio.
Keep in mind, there is very, very little vaccine hesitancy in the country. Like, people there do want to get the vaccine, and they want to get it as quick as possible, because, you know, they're kind of sick of having to do all the fucking lockdowns every time somebody reintroduces the damn virus into their country.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
But, yeah, Israel. So, yeah, I mean, let's be honest. We all knew about the first few weeks, like, the dominating story was the very quick and very, let's just, absolute brutal bombing of the West Bank by the Israeli military that, let's be honest, was so bad that it actually managed to turn the majority of the Western world against Israel for the first time in, like, ever.
Yep.
Like, in the United States, most people were like, okay, this is maybe a little much. But amongst other things, it may have been the one thing that finally tanked Netanyahu's career. Because this week, a group of politicians have gotten together from all over Israel's political spectrum. And I do mean literally all over Israel's political spectrum, coming together to form a coalition so that they can oust Netanyahu.
Yeah.
And it's bad when you've literally aligned all of these political parties that ideologically could not be different from each other against one person.
Yeah. Yeah, this includes, let's see, the small Islamist party, the United Arab List, which make it the first Arab party ever to be part of a governing coalition.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the opposition leader here is Yair Lapid and his main coalition partner, Naftali Bennett.
Yeah.
Came shortly after, or shortly before a midnight deadline, in front of the country from plunging into what would have been its fifth consecutive election in just over 2 years.
Yeah.
That's been kind of their problem, is they've never been able to get a cohesive government together.
And its reason they've never been able to get a cohesive government together is because of Netanyahu. He absolutely refuses to fucking resign from his being prime minister.
Yeah.
He is the sole reason why they've been having that problem.
Yeah, and this agreement still needs to be approved by the Knesset, or their parliament.
And yeah.
The expected takes place early next week.
Yeah.
That's through. Lapid and a diverse array of partners to span the Israeli political spectrum will end the record-setting 12-year rule of Netanyahu.
Yeah. For the record, have they pointed out like exactly who it is that's going to end up taking his place as prime minister if this deal goes through?
I think it would be Lapid.
Yeah, see, that's the problem, because Lapid, honestly, he ain't that much better than Netanyahu in a lot of ways. He's just slightly, shall we say,
less murdery?
Yeah, less murdery and not as much of a wild card. But, you know, he's not as much of a loose cannon as Netanyahu is. And speaking of Netanyahu, have you been seeing what him and his followers have been trying to do up to this point? They've now said there are talks that they're afraid something similar to what happened in D.C. on January 6th might end up happening in Tel Aviv.
Huh.
Yeah, because Netanyahu's followers are as fanatical as Trump's are.
I believe it.
There's a reason why they are compared so often. But hey, that's how a parliamentary system works, bitch.
Yep.
Moving on from there, our last hero of the week, a high school valedictorian from the state of Texas, decided to go off script for her valedictorian speech with one that spoke out against the state's new anti-abortion law.
Oh, that was great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she had two speeches. The one she submitted did not have any of the abortion stuff in it, but when they approved it, then she knew she was going to be switching over to the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Saying things like, I cannot give up this platform to promote complacency and peace when there is a war on my body and a war on my rights. I have dreams and hopes and ambitions. Every girl graduating today does. Without our input, without our consent, our control over that future has been stripped away from us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm-mm. Yep. Yes. Oh, yeah, it was so sweet. she got so much fucking applause.
Yeah, and I think they were considering pulling her diploma.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't.
Result of this, but they came to their senses. Yeah,
that would have been absolutely catastrophic for them.
Yeah, it was like, what was it, Stanford Law, their school, mm-hmm. where one of their graduates, people who was set to graduate, made fun of the Federalist Society, and so they put in a complaint and we're initially going to, you know, keep him from graduating.
Yeah.
Before pulling that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like,
yeah,
if you don't allow them to make fun of the federal society, you won't have many graduates.
Yeah.
And it's like, they're powerful enough as it is because they've got,
yeah,
they will dictate who goes on the SCOTUS.
Yeah. Seriously, why wouldn't you make fun of the federal society? Fuck those people.
Exactly.
But, yeah. All right. So, moving on from there, we're now starting the proper show proper. And the first story we have for the night is that the World Health Organization has offered new terms for the variants of COVID-19, because it's not just COVID-19 anymore. There are variants now.
Yeah. And these kind of make it easier to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Under this new system, the B.1.1.7 variant, which was the one that first identified in the UK, is known as Alpha.
Mm-hmm.
The B1351 from South Africa will be called Beta. The one in Brazil, known as P.1, will go by Gamma. And so there's various names like that. The new names won't officially replace the scientific names already assigned to new variants, but the WHO said it is making the change in an attempt to avoid fueling stigma towards mm-hmm. nations where new variants arise.
Mm-hmm.
Which is smart, because it makes it a lot easier to talk about them.
Right.
And
yeah,
gives less power to the idiots to try to call it the, you know, the China virus or the Wuhan virus, that kind of shit.
Oh, God, yeah. Ugh, fucking hell. Why did they have to bring that story back? I thought we'd gotten past that shit.
They still say that kind of shit. Trump and his cohorts.
So much so that they even managed to convince the fucking Biden administration to have to say something about it. God damn it. Anyway. Next up, West Virginia, in the most West Virginia way possible, is now offering trucks, guns, and money in exchange for people entering into the vaccine lottery.
Well, yeah, fucking who?
Yeah. It'll work.
Yeah, it will.
Don't get me wrong, it will be effective. Don't get me wrong, it's just...
Yeah, so they have a prize of $1.588 million. There are also college scholarship, truck here. I'm trying to see if there's details on the truck. I think it's like a hunting kind of truck. The guns are hunting rifles. There's also, let's see. Yeah, West Virginians ages 16 to 35 who got vaccinated could get a $100 savings bond. They're doing a lot of different things here. Yeah, there's like a second prize is the $588,000 part of that. So it's $1 million to the first prize, $588,000 to the second. Weekend vacations to state parks, lifetime hunting and fishing licenses. Custom hunting shotguns will boost that number. So yeah. You have to be registered for that. But yeah, ours here in Ohio has been going along. I think every Wednesday it's a new person that gets announced that gets $1 million, and they have one for the high school kids and such. They get a free 4-year scholarship to Ohio State, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the West Virginia thing. I think the governor also made his dog the mascot for this thing, which I guess is named Baby Dog.
Yeah. Again, it's West Virginia.
It's like, well, you couldn't come up with an actual name for it.
Yeah.
You just call it Baby Dog.
Yeah, it has
big old
its own
dog now.
Yeah. Yeah. Next up, the DEA is lifting limits on how many can make marijuana for studying.
Yeah, for more than 50 years, the federal government has only allowed one facility in the country to make marijuana for any sort of studies.
Mm-hmm.
It was a facility in the University of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
You also had to get a contract with the National Institute on Drug Abuse to be able to get any of this.
Mm-hmm.
But now they seem to be in the process of registering several additional American companies to produce cannabis for medical and scientific studies, so that allow much more work to be done to find out about you know, the sort of health effects it has, therapy uses, all that kind of stuff that have not been studied very much because, you know, lots of federal roadblocks in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully this yeah. stuff eventually leads to the decriminalization of it as a federal offense.
Yeah. Eventually.
Yeah.
Anyway. Next up. Johnson & Johnson's appeal of the $2 billion talc verdict rejected by SCOTUS. So you're going to have to explain this one.
Remember we talked a while ago that it had been found that their talcum baby powder potentially caused cancer?
Yeah, that's about.
Okay. Yeah, they've gone through lawsuits over this and have been given a $2 billion verdict in favor of women who claim they developed ovarian cancer from using Johnson & Johnson talcum products. Mm-hmm. The justice did not comment Tuesday in rejecting their appeal. The company argued mm-hmm. that it was not treated fairly in facing one trial involving 22 cancer sufferers, came from 12 states and different backgrounds. Missouri jury initially awarded the women $4.7 billion, but a state appeals court dropped two women from the suit and reduced the award to $2 billion. The jury found that the company's talc products contain asbestos, and asbestos-laced talc can cause ovarian cancer, and the company disputes both points.
Mm.
And yeah, they have stopped selling their talc-based Johnson's baby powder in the U.S. and Canada, though it remains on the market elsewhere.
Yeah, because of course it is.
Yeah,
it's like how all the fucking big tobacco companies basically, you know, shifted all of their business away from, you know, the European model and shifted it to the global south. So, yeah. Next up, President Biden has put Vice President Kamala Harris in charge of leading the administration's campaign for expanding voting rights.
Yeah. Sort of put her in charge of this campaign to kind of work on the, what is it, VR1, I think it is, the bill that is the Democrats have been working on to expand voting rights across the country as, you know, the various red states are working on clamping that shit down.
Yeah.
You know, it's the worst thing that could happen to them.
Mm-hmm. It would basically, because if everybody in the U.S. was allowed to be a Republican majority ever again. And they know that. But, yeah. So, I guess we'll be seeing Vice President Harris getting in on this shit. Yeah. Fucking throw your weight around a little bit. You won the goddamn election. Do it. Stop trying to compromise against yourself with the Republicans. But yeah, anyway. Moving on from there. Oh, yeah. So this week we had a very grim anniversary that came about. It's one of those events that you rarely – that. Let's be honest. Like I said at the top of the show, most of America did not know that this actually happened until the first episode of Watchmen came out. The Tulsa Race Riot, also known as the Tulsa Race Massacre, the bombing of Black Wall Street, all kinds of names attributed to it. But what it is it was essentially a gigantic pogrom against black people in this small part of Tulsa, Oklahoma. It was famed for being a very, you know, basically... That whole thing about how people keep saying, you know, the black folks should pull themselves up by their bootstraps and they wouldn't be so poor. Well, they tried to do that, and they were very successful. So successful that all their white neighbors got pissed off and burned the shit to the ground. Now, exactly what it is that was like the spark that started it is kind of up to debate. Usually the incident that's sort of pointed to is a... incident of a young black gentleman walked down the street from where he worked to go to a restroom because, you know, segregation and shit. He had to go into a elevator that was attended to by a 15-year-old white girl. And if you were black at this time, being in an enclosed space with a white person, and especially a white female, was one of the most dangerous things you could do. But, you know, nature calls. So he went there. He got into that elevator. Exactly what happened after that, between that point, no one is really sure. It's thought that maybe he fell towards her, or she fell towards him, or he tripped on something. Anyway, it spooked her, and she screamed, and he ended up running out of the building because, you know, he was in an enclosed space with a white female, and she started screaming, and he fucking knew what was going to happen if someone caught him. Because what what people were assuming happened. But unfortunately, the story ended up sort of stretching beyond what even those essential facts, to the point that it started going around that he had actually forced himself upon her. He ended up getting arrested. For the record, the woman, like many years later before she died, she wrote a letter where she basically admitted that, you know, he never forced himself on her. It was all an accident, a misunderstanding. It didn't really matter at that time, though, because at that point, everybody and all the white folks in that city and the Klan got together. And, well, if you've seen the first episode of The Watchmen, that's basically how it went down. They just straight up set the whole part of the town on fire. They looted the stores, shot everyone that moved. They requisitioned, like, biplanes and shit, dropping, incendiary bombs and Molotov cocktails on buildings and people. What really set them off was the fact the black population that was living there wasn't going to just take it lying down, because a lot of the male population living in that part of town were also World War I veterans, meaning they knew how to use a rifle and to set up barricades and shit. And after all this happened, Tulsa and just the white establishment in general did everything they could to bury this event from popular imagination. And keep in mind, the Tulsa Massacre wasn't the only, you know, event of its kind. A few years earlier, there had been a similar massacre in my home state of Georgia, in Atlanta.
Black people start getting rights and respect and that kind of stuff, there's usually a white mob shortly after to quelch any sort of positivity.
For centuries, the establishment denied that this event finally happened. But this week, 100 years later, President Biden actually visited the city of Tulsa to both acknowledge that this happened, that it was a massacre, and to actually discuss the event.
Yeah, definitely. Talking about it for much too long, the history of what took place here was told in silence, cloaked in darkness. But just because history is silent doesn't mean that it did not take place. While darkness can hide much, it erases nothing.
Yeah.
Some injustices are so heinous, so horrific, so grievous, it can't be buried no matter how hard people try.
Yeah. And you know, people did survive it.
Yeah.
Like, adults and children, some of them actually went to the Capitol this week and the previous week to actually, you know, testify about their experience during the whole event. And I mean, these people are like in their hundreds now, but they were there and they remember it all pretty clearly. This isn't like ancient history. This only happened a couple of generations ago.
Yeah, he said here, untold bodies dumped into mass graves. Families who at the time waited for hours and days to know the fate of their loved ones are now descendants who have gone 100 years without closure.
They're looking for those mass graves now, by the way.
Yeah.
They're exhuming parts of Tulsa now to try and find them. And they'll find them, because there were a lot of victims that they left behind. And of course, the internet being the internet, there were a bunch of people who tried to downplay the event or outright deny that it actually happened.
There was Fox News trying to find any spin they can to turn this as an attack on them.
Yeah.
Which is a hell of a way to go.
Yeah, it's also a hell of a stretch, too.
Yeah, well, there was, I think Tucker Carlson showed a clip of him talking about white supremacy is a scourge on this country. He's like, see, he's saying white Republican men are bad. If you want to say that the two are connected, sure, go ahead.
Yeah. If you want to make that association, that's on you. We didn't say it.
Yeah.
I mean, we may be thinking it very loudly, but we didn't say it.
Yeah.
But yeah. And again, like I said, this was not a singular event. It repeated itself all over the country in the decade before and the decade afterwards, too. Yeah, so, and like I said, how many, let me just ask you guys, how many of you did not know that this was a thing until you saw that episode of The Watchmen? Or you heard people talk about that episode of The Watchmen?
That was the first for me.
Yeah, I think so. About that time is when it started hitting the internet and making Reddit and Imgur and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and like, keep in mind, you know, this is Watchmen we're talking about. And Watchmen, its whole basis is like an alternate history thing. So, you know, where the idea where like superheroes are like a real objective force in culture. And so, you know, people were like, wait, this was a real thing? They didn't make it up just for this show? No, no. This actually happened.
It's sort of a thing of anything, like, wait, this happened and nobody's talked about this?
Yeah.
Nobody's told us this happened in history class at any point?
Yeah. Yeah. And if anything, believe it or not, the producers of that show kind of toned it down because it was actually much worse than what they show on the showed on the show. They had to basically like they had to actually sort of not they couldn't a lot of the really awful show stuff they could only suggest. They couldn't actually show it to you in real time. But anyway, moving on from there, once again, some hackers and some cyber attacks reared their ugly head when the world's largest meat processing company was disrupted by a cyber attack.
Yeah, this is JBS.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Australia's largest meat and food processing company. With 47 facilities across the country, including abattoirs, feedlots, and meat processing sites.
Mm-hmm.
They have around 11,000 people. They said in a statement from Greeley, Colorado, Monday, it was the target on Sunday of an organized cybersecurity attack. I think some of its servers supporting its North American and Australian IT systems. Their backup servers were not affected and actively working with an incident response firm to restore its systems as soon as possible, but it's disrupted their ability to do work and sort of actually produce meat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they are back up and running yet. I think they were hoping to here in later this past week, but we do know a bit more about who did it.
Yep. It was our evil.
Yeah. Ransomware gang, as they're called here. The FBI has said or attributed this attack on them.
Mm-hmm.
They're Russian. No surprise.
Yep.
But and the FBI said it'll work to bring the group to justice and urged anyone who's the victim of a cyber attack to contact the Bureau immediately.
Mm.
They haven't posted anything related to the hack on its dark website.
Mm.
But yeah, that's kind of it for the time being.
Yep, pretty much. But yeah, once again, pretty much every company really needs to really work up their cybersecurity. Because this is like the second major like disruptive cyber attack in like 3 weeks.
At least that's been big news.
Yeah. Next up, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy is currently under federal investigation for campaign contributions. Please lock his ass up so we can put someone else in that position.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, none of us are surprised by this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this involves a published story from last year on allegations from some employees at DeJoy's former company, New Breed Logistics, that they were pressured to contribute to Republican political candidates and were paid back through bonuses.
Yep.
Reimbursement efforts such as those could violate federal law.
Mm-hmm. Should very clearly violate federal law.
Yeah.
Because it's not only unethical, it seems pretty fucking crooked.
Yeah.
So yes, please bring him to trial and lock his ass up.
Yeah.
Be that last bit of the Trump administration we can finally fucking shake off.
Yeah, because he's got plans to, you know, raise the price of stamps and that here in the short term.
Yeah. Next up, we're off the, well, I say we're more or less off the really serious stuff. But Naomi Osaka is actually dropping out of French Open this week over mental health and media concerns. And yeah, this is some heavy shit.
Yeah, she is, I think, the number two player in the world for the women's tennis tour.
Mm-hmm.
She had put out a statement before the French Open saying she would not do any post-game or post-match press conferences. Sort of did that after her first match. Immediately got a fine from the French Tour people. The other dudes that run the other majors for the tour were also threatening to expel her from their tournaments as well if she did not report for this. So then she basically took to her Instagram with a big statement saying that she is going to, or she was going to withdraw, saying, "Hey everyone, this isn't a situation I ever imagined or intended. Like, now the best thing for the tournament, the other players, and my well-being is that I withdraw so that everyone can get back to focusing on the tennis going on in Paris." So she got kind of the better of them. Because they seem to very much be trying to force her, like, "Well, obviously you're going to keep playing, so we're going to keep doing these threats and such to get you to do press conferences."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "You know what? I don't really fucking need you. I'm going to withdraw here and make you guys look like the assholes."
Yeah.
Like she said that she has had long bouts of depression since the U.S. Open in 2018. Has had a really hard time coping with that. I think as well with her sort of popularity and dealing with all that kind of stuff. So yeah, and has kind of had trouble dealing with press conferences. So I think she wants to sort of get herself in a better spot and sort of work with the organizers of these tournaments to find ways to better deal with that sort of stuff when people have, you know, mental health issues, episodes, that kind of stuff. To which she's gotten a lot of support from other big athletes in the other sports. And it's a thing that, you know, doesn't really get talked about much in sports. Because sports are a very demanding profession to have, especially as a, when you're, you know, people of color, there are other things that go on as well. There's been like a recent spate of shit going on with the NBA during the playoffs of just fans just throwing shit at athletes as they're going to leave, that kind of stuff. Like one player had a bag of popcorn thrown on him. Another one had a water bottle thrown at him. Luckily it missed. But it's like, these people aren't here for your fucking amusement. They're here to compete. And you don't have any right to them doing everything you want it, them to do.
All right. Yeah. So, oh yeah. Next up, Facebook is extending their suspension of Donald Trump from Facebook and Instagram for another 2 years. He's no longer banned there, but he still can't do anything on there for another 2 years.
Yeah, this is, I think, retroactive to the start of the year. January 7th, when they first took his accounts down. So he'll be suspended until at least January 7th, 2023.
Yep.
At that point, Facebook will consult experts and evaluate external factors, including instances of violence, restrictions on peaceful assembly, and other markers of civil unrest.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the wake of this, they have said that they are no longer going to be sort of letting politicians, I forget if it was ads or something like that, be able to sort of abuse the rules that, you know, the normal people can't get away with.
Yeah.
So that's sort of something they're trying to be less less willing to allow politicians just abuse their their service.
Yeah.
Their tools.
Yeah.
Which is good to see them finally have a spine.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit too late, but...
Yeah, definitely. And I know this is already going to start, like, the likes of, like, fucking Josh Hawley and shit going about, like, oh, big tech tyranny and shit. And I'm like, this is your beloved free market working.
Yeah.
But anyway. Yeah, next up, NASA has announced plans to send two new missions to Venus.
Yep.
Alrighty.
Yeah, let's see. I'm trying to see what else it says here. They announced that after considering four different proposals for its Discovery program, including proposed trips to moons of Jupiter and Neptune, the agency went all in on Venus. The two missions are Veritas, a mission to map Venus's surface, understand its geologic history, and Da Vinci Plus, a mission that would send a sphere of instruments plunging down through Venus's fearsome atmosphere, which is filled with clouds made of sulfuric acid droplets and other unknown chemicals. And that's sort of a thing that's been a problem in the past when they've wanted to send instruments and such down there, is that making that kind of stuff that can survive sulfuric acid is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, these missions could be ready to launch in 2026, but the exact timing is still to be determined. And they're hoping to launch both in a single rocket.
Yeah. All right. We'll see what comes out of that. And next up, we're now in the entertainment part of the show. HBO Max has launched its $10 tier with ads.
Yeah. Because I imagine the $15 thing has sort of limited their ability to grow as quickly as they would hope. Like.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of a cheaper $10 a month tier. The $15 is, ad-free. This one will have ads. They say it's a maximum of 4 minutes per hour of ads and none during HBO programming. So that's kind of the wrinkle there.
Mm-hmm.
The HBO original stuff is not going to have ads either way.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of the interesting thing that they're doing.
So that doesn't change it for people who, like, use HBO Max because they have it on their cable thing, right?
I don't think so. I think they'd still get the same tier they've been getting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Unless they changed something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they'd be like, ah, this is less money for us. Fuck you. But imagine you'd find out whenever your contract is getting close to being up or whatever, and they had the option of changing things.
Yeah. Speaking of streaming services, Paramount Plus is launching its $5 ad-supported tier on June 7th.
Yeah, that's the $1 less than the predecessor to the service, CBS All Access, had for their cheapest tier. The full Paramount Plus premium tier with no ads, except in live programming, it still remains the same at $10 a month. The Paramount Plus Essential plan, while it will include live sports, including CBS broadcasts NFL games, the UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues, will not carry local CBS stations, whereas CBS All Access with ads did. I assume the premium tier does. But the previous CBS All Access $5.99 month plan will no longer be available, but all existing subscribers will be able to keep their service at that price point. unless they cancel service.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Paramount Plus Essential includes on-demand streaming options, spanning the full suite of current and upcoming shows and movies, including from the media conglomerates BET, CBS, Comedy Central, MTV, Nickelodeon, Paramount Pictures, and the Smithsonian Channel, plus mm-hmm. breaking news through CBS News. So yeah, mm-hmm. some cheaper options for some of these newer services.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That'd be pretty decent for like a 1 month sub. You're just like, I want to see some stuff that's on here.
Mm. All right. And finally, last story of the night. The Super Mario Brothers, the Morton Jankel cut is now out on archive.org. For those of you who don't know, Morton Jankel is actually a reference to Rocky Morton and Annabelle Jankel, who were the movie's directors.
Yeah. This is like a fan cut that has a bunch of extra footage in there.
Mm-hmm.
Including one that is, was it Iggy and Spike?
Yep.
Them just rapping.
Of course, because again, it's the early 90s.
Yeah. And the people making this thing had no originality to them.
Yeah, I mean, they were basically trying to make a cyberpunk version of Mario Brothers.
They're like, oh, we got a bunch of stuff that kind of looks like it came from Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Let's just use that.
Yeah.
Because that's cheaper.
Yeah, they did. I mean, well, the thing is, like, Annabelle Jankel is one of the Max Headroom. Which, I guess is sort of gives her some kind of credit. I don't fucking know. It's that movie is a goddamn train wreck from beginning to end. Just
yeah. And this is a way of seeing what else they worked on. So it was a movie that got made and then got a lot of work done to it afterwards
mm-hmm.
to change things and make it to whatever it ended up becoming at the end.
And Bob Hoskins has had publicly said that he remembers almost nothing of the filming of that movie because he was absolutely gunned on whatever alcohol he could get his hands on.
And I think Dennis Hopper said he just hated it the entire time.
Yeah, he just hated doing it. He especially hated wearing that fucking makeup.
Yeah. The hair and all that was probably not a fun time for him.
Yeah. I will admit the one thing about that movie, the weird bizarro versions of like Mario staples they tried to push into the movie here and there. Like the, you know, like how the bomb-oms are like these little wind-up toy things.
Everybody's scared to death of them.
Yeah, or like how they turned the bullet bills into like literal like ammunition that you loaded into shit. Or how they turned the fireballs and the fire flowers into just literal fucking flamethrowers. Because fuck it.
I want to say they had the sniper rifle
mm-hmm.
in there.
Yeah, it was they took the fucking super scope.
Yeah,
super scope. Yeah. They took the super scope and they turned it into this gun that would devolve people into slime.
Yeah.
Or just devolve them, period. It was like a devolving gun. Yeah, it was... Goddamn. It is one of those movies you have to watch once for just how completely off the rails it goes.
One of the reasons why Nintendo's extremely skittish about any sort of adaptations of their properties.
Yeah, it's the reason why they were not letting people do film adaptations of their stuff until, like, the last few years.
And even then, because I think the Legend of Zelda show that they were working on for Netflix got canceled because, like, everything in Hollywood, word of that happening leaked out.
Mm-hmm.
And then in their fury, just canceled it completely.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we're not letting you fuckers ruin this shit a second time.
We haven't seen like what the hell that was.
Yeah.
They're just mad that Hollywood leaks. Like it's like that's how it works.
Yeah.
They announce shit way early and things leak through the grapevines because that's how you promote things and, you know, push how people get, you know, new gigs. It's like, oh, yeah, they're working on this new thing. Hasn't been announced yet, but that is, and then eventually leaks.
Mm-hmm. Now, the good news is they are still producing that animated Mario film that's supposed to come through. And, you know, I've been hearing good things, so we'll see how that comes out. But, yeah, I believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, we got ourselves a show. All right, awesome. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, we got our bits of unscripted shenanigans just sort of seeded all over the internet in the forms of TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not there, oh, just wait a few minutes. As soon as we hear of its existence, we will be on there. We're kind of like herpes. No, I'm not going to qualify that. I'm just going to say it as a declared statement.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, this has been Let's Weekend. I have been Brian Perkins, and for Patrick Muthlin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Logis, I'm going to say goodnight, sleep tight. If you have not gotten your vaccine shot, please, for the love of God, get it. I want to be able to go out to the world and not have to wear a mask.